for me, it's not about the money. It's about the journey. That's the exciting part for me. Continually growing and stretching and becoming, that's the magic for me. And helping, like, this is, I feel so lucky to be on this call, like, just to be able to impart a little bit of the wisdom that I have to anybody that picks or, you know, listens to this podcast. Like, but I just want to tell, like, your listeners, it's okay right where you're at today. You are okay, one step at a time. If you want to be something different and change, that's totally possible, but just put one foot in front of the other and you're going to get there.
Welcome to the Edge of Excellence podcast. This show is for current and aspiring leaders that are dedicated to showing up every day in their lives with excellence. We break down the careers of those excelling so you can understand what is out there and how to rise up in every field you choose. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Your host has spent his life promoting global entrepreneurship, helping 20-somethings find their passion, and working to help others achieve excellence. CEO of College Works, Matt Stewart.
Welcome to the show. I am excited about this one. We have Genevieve Elefante Sigmund on here, president of Platinum Storage, and we're going to get into a different type of real estate, what she does. It's not about flipping houses, what you see on TV. It's about a lot of different things that we're going to get into. Her type of real estate, broaden your mind in the real estate world. We're going to get into ignoring the negative voices in your head and taking the shot. Just take the shot. Because Genevieve used to have a lot of anxiety and fears, and we're going to talk about how she got over them, because a lot of people have it, and she keeps kicking butt. Welcome to the show, and welcome to the Edge of Excellence. Well, Genevieve, it's been a little while since I talked to you, and a little while since I talked to your husband, but man, you two are good to me, and I really appreciate you making time. Welcome to the Edge of Excellence.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful to be here and be able to spend some wonderful time with you, Matt. You're an amazing person. Lucky to be here.
Where's my flag? Where's my flag? There it is. Yellow flag. Yellow flag. Foul. You are not excited to be here, but I appreciate you coming out of your comfort zone and doing this, because people need to hear what you have to say. You've got a different angle. You do things a little bit differently in real estate, and a lot of people don't know what all these careers are out there in real estate. But before we go way back and dig into your life, and before we get deep into being a player in an interesting area of real estate, before we get into selecting fantastic locations in this savvy, sophisticated industry, before we get into board service and chairwomanship, I got to know, what is your definition of excellence?
That is an incredible question, and something that I think maybe has changed for me kind of throughout the course of my life. But asking me that question today, I think the definition of excellence is getting up every day and giving it your all and being willing to fight for another day, to give it your best, to put one foot in front of the other, to not give up, to take your shot, and to be kind and loving to yourself and others and be the best version of yourself that you can be every single day. It's a commitment. So I take it very seriously. It's been a road to kind of get where I am today. It's a constant journey forward. It's a never-ending journey that we're on, you know, continuing the excellence. There's never, in my opinion, there's never this perfection or excellence at the end of the journey. It's a constant change and evolution, hopefully for the better. And there's going to be downs and dips and frustration and worry and despair, but it's about getting back up every single time.
So it's not about being excellent at anything. It's not about being the greatest athlete or the greatest business person. It's the act of just being excellent every day, getting up every day, giving it all, not giving up. And I know you pretty darn well, kind and loving and the best version of yourself. I see one version of you every time I talk to you, and it's a damn good version of humanity, but I guess it's also the best version of yourself. That's cool. Different.
Yeah.
I've done like 140 of these. Everyone's different. Some are slightly similar. Yours is totally different. Well, I'm going to quit my blabbing.
Interesting.
We need to go back. Go ahead.
I was going to say, just to hit off that too. And I think it's okay to be really good at something. You know, there's a goal. I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a friend. I'm trying to excel in a journey at business. So, you know, I'm not kind of in this journey to be average. I want to be great at it at the end of the day. So I think it's okay to have that goal in mind. But for me, it's putting myself kind of in that driver's seat and really reflecting to others that I'm trying to do my best, that I can sleep at night knowing that I've given it my all. Because when you make that commitment to yourself every single day, I don't know, it has really helped empower me to do things that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise done. So
kind of implied that you want to be great, kind of implied that you want to be the best you can be at mom, wife, friend, in business. But it's a little bit different. It's kind of forgiving the way you're saying it, that every day you get up, no matter what happens, then give it your all, and eventually you'll get there.
Every day is a new day. It's a new start. We're going to make mistakes. You're going to think about things differently. You're going to grow. You're going to mature. You know, the way that I think I approach life today is so much different than 5 years ago. So it's just, you know, it's a journey. And the path of excellence, you know, self-discovery, it's so many things. It's being kind to yourself, loving. It's putting, you know, truly the oxygen mask on first so you can really give to others. And it's just really opened up a lot of creativity and ambition, freedom for me that I didn't necessarily have, you know, when I was in my 20s, you know, and kind of stuck in a lot of that perfectionism and people pleasing and grinding. And it's like, I just didn't even know who I was. So a commitment to even learning and self-reflecting, knowing who I am, knowing my faults, trying to be better.
I know your history, and I know you and I go deep. There's snorkelers and there's scuba divers. Scuba divers are down underwater. They're in the depth. They're down there for a while. They got the equipment. They're looking in the nooks and crannies. Snorkelers kind of stay safe, stay on top. We're scuba divers. We go deep every time. And I, you know, you and I know each other pretty well. This kind to yourself, loving, being less hard on yourself. That's stuff that you've been working on for a while, because you used to beat yourself up a lot because you hadn't become perfect yet. And you used to beat yourself up a lot because you're not the best in the world at something. And over the past few years, you've learned to get up every day, give it your all, take some shots and keep going. And when you stopped being hard on yourself, you kind of unleashed the excellence, didn't you?
Yes. And that's when there was kind of a return to a lot of to the person that I think I'm truly supposed to be. You know, I think as a child, you adopt so many bad habits through trauma, through pain, through different things that have happened to you in life, and you kind of create this shell around you. So it's really about coming out of that shell and returning to the person that you're truly created and meant to be. So that's the journey that I'm on. And it's a progress. It's not,
it never ends.
It's every day. It's every day. It never ends. So I think for me, even in my 30s, maybe not disclose my age, but, you know, even in my 30s, it was like, you know, it was still challenging. So I wish I would have had somebody. This is an amazing podcast to be able to show young people, even young adults, you know, people in their 30s, that you don't have to have it all together. It's just one foot in front of the other. Wow. And you might not be able to see the end right now, but just that momentum of moving forward and getting better. And it's kind of like the stock market, right? Like you're going to have ups and you're on this upward, and then you're going to fall down and maybe fall down further than you were before, but then you get back up. And over the course of your life overall, you've come here, you've won. There's been a return on that investment. So I like that analogy.
I think there's people listening right now and they probably can relate to this. They're beating themselves up. They're not perfect. They've got those 7,000 negative thoughts that are kind of clouding their mind. And what I think you're saying is, when you were really hard on yourself and you were really judgmental towards yourself and you were really aggressive about the problems or the issues and the things you needed to change, it doesn't work as well as if you stop and recognize what's great about you and recognize the progress you've made and recognize where you're going. And you're not at the end yet. You never get to the end. But loving yourself, getting back up again, giving it all, kind and loving, you said, best version of yourself. When you have that paradigm shift, and you change your mindset to, I'm pretty damn good. I'm not perfect yet. I'm pretty damn good. And I'm going to keep working the rest of my life until I'm the best at being a business person, or the best at being a mom or a dad, or the best at being a friend, or the best at being a salesperson, or what it is. You just kind of recognize, I've made progress and I'm going to make more progress, and I can't beat myself up on where I'm not perfect. And you have those 7,000
right.
negative thoughts that you just got to grab it and go, no, that's not true. I'm awesome. Boom. And you've been doing that for years. And I mean, I always thought you were excellent. I do remember when you were hard on yourself. I remember those days, and I remember thinking, wow, why is she so hard on herself? And I know that you're not as hard on yourself anymore as you used to be, but you're still pretty hard on yourself. So it's a process, right? It's a process.
It's a process.
When we're 195, we'll get through the process, which I'm planning on making it to 195. I hope Jeff's listening to this.
Yes.
Jeff, I need the damn Clearly scan. Buy the Clearly machine. Get me the heart scan. Get me all these scans. I need to live forever. Genevieve's husband's a, what's it called? What kind of doctor is
radiologist.
That?
Radiologist.
How can, how can I forget? Neuroradiologist.
Yep.
And he is a badass mofo too. Okay, so we're going to get back into the beginning. We're going to go way, way, way back. We got to figure out what you did to become a leader in the community and respected businesswoman, a woman in real estate, chairing the Women in Real Estate Network for Young Presidents Organization, and getting over your fear of doing podcasts. But where were you in high
school? My first podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This took a while to get done. I'm so glad you're here. It's so far so good. Let's talk about high school. What was life like? How did you see yourself? Where were you headed, and how did you find your path?
Honestly, high school was incredibly tough for me. I hated it, to be honest. I was, you know, growing up, I was a highly competitive athlete. I was I started gymnastics at the age of 3 and was competitive by the time I was 7. I was doing double workouts, you know, by the time I was like 8, 9 years old. And at 10 years old, I had a pretty bad accident where I shattered my growth plate in my elbow. And it was really just my world kind of turned upside down. I was also a nationally ranked trampoline champion. And I was headed to Frankfurt, Germany to compete in the nationals, and I was going to win it. And I shattered my arm. And I was so angry and I was so devastated. And it was like it turned my whole world upside down. And I really felt that was kind of a pivotal turning point for me, because from that day on, I really lost my identity. And I started to have a lot of anxiety and fear over a lot of the sports that I did. You know, I continued to kind of move forward into diving. I competed at a national level in diving. And so moving into high school, it's like, I just kind of carried this like person forward that was just a shell of me. And, you know, I went through the motions. I was very much a tomboy. I actually hung out with a lot of guys in high school because I could athletically keep up. I'd go snowboarding with them, and I wore long shorts. And, you know, I've always been, I don't know about it. I mean, kind of a tomboy in a lot of ways. So I just, you know, I kind of really, that was kind of my natural thing. I walked on to varsity swimming in high school. I played varsity water polo 2 times, you know, all 2 years, all CIF water polo. That was an incredible journey for me. I had a great time, but it just still was, it was challenging because I just still did not have this confidence under me. You know, I remember one time I was playing in a game, and my mom, and this is funny because this kind of goes back to some of the advice that I think I give myself on a daily basis. She goes, Genevieve, you are so good. Just take the shot. And that kind of makes me emotional because just take the shot, guys. Get up there, put yourself out there. And I didn't realize like how good I was. I mean, I remember Coach Hinman, who's no longer with us, you know, on this earth, sadly anymore. He was an amazing mentor and coach. And he sat us down and he was upset. And he goes, Genevieve has like one of the best arms on this team. And I like hearing that, I was like, oh my gosh, but it still didn't necessarily like kind of give me the comp, because it was just so, I just put, again, I was still in this like pressure cooker environment where like nothing was good enough.
So first of all, and I know we've talked about this before, you're a combination of both my kids. Jake did gymnastics, did diving, competed nationally. Kennedy did water polo. Jake stopped. And I think I told you he wanted to quit right before nationals. Like, can't do that. Go to nationals, see what happens. And then if you quit, go down and shake your coach's hand and look him in the eye and thank him. First day after nationals, Jill calls me. He walked down, shook the hand. Wait here, Mom. He's like 12 years old. Shakes the hand, comes back. He just couldn't handle the diving and the young girls smacking on the water and crying all the time. It just, And he's up there in his little bikini in the rain and the sleet. So you're kind of a combination of both. But let me get this right. Just like Jill, you broke your growth plate in your elbow. And this created this identity crisis for you, because all you were in your own mind was this great gymnast. And in your own mind, you weren't great at other things. This was it. You were banking it all on that. And when you moved after that young age of 10 years old, you just weren't this gymnast anymore. And if someone's listening right now, you were great at something, you had to give it up. You may have had this same identity crisis and you weren't recognizing the things you were good at. And so you were doing these other sports, water polo, swimming. And your mom says to you, no, sweetie, you are that good. Just take the shot. And that's kind of the advice to the listener that I heard you giving. Look at what you're good at. Give yourself some credit. And even if you're not the best, just go for it. And so in high school, your mom tells you this, but it didn't sink in yet. Is that what you're saying?
It didn't quite resonate. And I think I never really kind of grieved or mourned this identity loss that I had. I didn't know who I mean, high school is so hard. I mean, it's such a tough time to find, even college. I mean, you think I had everything figured out in college? No way. Are you kidding me? I mean, I'm still figuring things out. So again, like for people that are watching and listening and they're in college and I don't know what I'm going to do and all, and pressure, stop. Take a deep breath, sit down, take time to listen to you and to your heart. Let your heart just guide you. And it's hard to hear at first. It takes time.
You have to learn how to hear.
Don't get frustrated with the process too, because it's easy to get frustrated with the process of getting wrapped up in just, oh, I got to heal. I got to figure this out. I got to find a job. And oh, what am I going to do? And it's like, you know, it's like you're putting all this pressure on yourself. You got to slow down. You know, a lot of these kind of motivational guys that are guys and gals that are kind of out there right now, they have this like, you know, tough it out, go. And it's like this fitness and you see all these fit people and like work harder, get your ass out of bed, you know, pump, you know, it's like all this message. Yes, yes. But for me, look, everybody's different. Everybody needs a different message. Everybody, I mean, we are so different, all of us, but I needed the message of chill out, Genevieve, slow down, take a deep breath, take the time, listen. You know, I was so out of touch.
What are you listening to?
Just that inner wisdom, that intuition. And that intuition is like, it's like a loving voice. It's a loving person that's guiding you along and it feels exciting and it feels.
So you had two voices. You had the inner voice of you're not good enough, you lost your identity, don't take the shot. And then you had a different loving voice.
Yeah, that old wounded child voice, that hurt child had a lot of bad coping mechanisms. So slowing down to give yourself again that inner child, I know it sounds a little kind of woo-woo, but that inner child love that maybe you didn't get, that kindness that maybe you didn't get from your mom or dad, or maybe you didn't get it from yourself or a coach. You know, so really taking the time to turn internally and give myself those things that I felt that I really needed in my life that maybe I didn't get as a kid. I mean, I was a very empathetic child growing up. There was a lot of kind of chaos in my family. We didn't have a lot of money growing up. You know, there was my dad, you know, was in business. It was stressful. There were times when we didn't, you know where the next mortgage payment was coming from. So I took on a lot of that burden as a child and tried to fix it. So I'm kind of like the fixer, I think, in the family, constantly trying. And that's a coping mechanism, right?
Yeah. So I think I know that everybody has that horrible voice. You're not good enough. You suck. And I know there's the 7,000 negative thoughts that go through. And I try to teach people, grab them and refute them. I don't know that everybody has, maybe I'm wrong. Does everybody have that kind, loving voice?
No, I didn't.
You have to develop.
No. Oh, yeah. And it's frustrating because then you start like, where is it? Where's it at? When's it going to show up? Like, when am I going to actually get this? Like,
how did you do it?
How'd
you get it?
I tried not to focus on anything negative that came up. So like, oh, you're not good enough. Or, oh, you got to get on this podcast. You're going to fall. Like, nope, I'm not listening. I acknowledge like, okay, I see it. Move on. Not.
Did you replace it?
I replaced it. I am capable. I am strong. I am smart. I can do these things. you know, I've done all these things, and it's one step at a time, one goal at a time. And there's going to be times like I could come on, you know, a podcast or speak and flop. There's been plenty of times when I've, you know, just not felt like I did my best and, oh, I'll beat myself. I try to not beat myself up anymore. That's still a process too, but.
I'm pretty good at this, and it's a wonderful world to be, because I'm always awesome. Because anytime something goes by, I grab it and go, that's not true. But like you said, it's like the stock market. It goes up and down. And I have to remind myself to ignore that negative voice. And I have to remind myself to replace it. And so you're in high school and you don't quite have that figured out yet. And then you head off to college. Where'd you go to college?
Oh, USC. And I'm still a hot mess.
I knew you went to USC.
I'm still a little bit lost. And so I kind of put all, because I'm, you know, if I focus on something, I'm putting a lot of energy behind it. So I'm like, I'm going to get good grades. I'm focused. I didn't do any of the sorority stuff. It was like USC, political science, law and society minor, you know, honors.
I wanted to be a dirty lawyer.
Yes.
Oh my God, yes. Genevieve.
I thought I wanted to go to law school.
You and I are the same person. We're the same person. I have the same history and political science degree. I wanted to be a dirty lawyer too. And I don't want to generalize and say that all lawyers are dirty, but they are. And I tell my friend Brian that, who's the president of Stradling Yoka Carlson Roth, who was my roommate, and he's the nicest guy in the world. And Siraj, who works here at the office, but I still have to go with that, because you went to law school. You were motivated to go to law school. So, and I've just lost 1,000 listeners and probably some people quit that work in my business, but I don't care. I don't like it. I don't like going to battle. We're business people. We're creating. So you go to USC. So you must have been really good in school. You must have been really good on those tests. One of our friends' daughters got a perfect score on the SAT and a 4.6, and USC deferred her. I had lunch with him yesterday.
That's ridiculous.
I'll come up with a fake name. Like, what name could I come up with? Dwayne Jensen. Okay, that's a fake name. And it's like, what the hell's going on? So you're this.
That upsets me. That upsets me. All those great and kids not getting any of these. That's ridiculous. I think that it's out of control, but that's another situation. But yeah, USC, good grades, focus. So
you were doing really well, but you're still not giving yourself credit at the time. And you did really well at USC too.
Did really well at USC too, but still had no idea after that what I wanted to do. So I came and worked for my dad, who was, you know, kind of had, you know, he was still kind of in the startup phase of creating his business. He was originally, you know, it started a self-storage property management company, and then he had gotten into brokerage. My dad is, you know, was extremely well in the brokerage business, said, why am I not kind of syndicating these deals and putting my own deals together? So late 90s, he starts trying to pull some friends and family money and syndicate some deals and put his own deals together. And that's kind of the beginning of our family business that was created in the late 90s. And then I joined him in 2003. I think, you know, it was kind of like a family first. There was a lot of chaos in the business. There were some people that left that really did it in a kind of real ugly manner. I mean, they were hacking into our computer. I mean, it's a whole story. It's a whole story. Welcome to business, people. Welcome to business.
Yeah, there's always a story. But back up a little bit. So you and I are both going to highly respected, hard to get into schools. We both want to be lawyers. We both end up as business people. We both end up great friends through YPO, Young Presidents Organization. Thank goodness we both joined, because I wouldn't have met you and Jeff.
Yes.
So you said I didn't know what I wanted to do, but you were in college thinking you wanted to be a lawyer. When did you decide that maybe you didn't want to be a lawyer?
Felt maybe like an easy kind of default plan, like go get a law degree. And you know, you're very creative in the way that you kind of think outside the box. I like to kind of dissect ideas and arguments and all that stuff. But I just started talking to a lot of people that were lawyers. I had worked for a paralegal here in Newport Beach, right around the corner. And everybody I talked to, I mean, like 99% of attorneys said they hated it.
Okay, so advice number one. So I wanted to be a lawyer, and I didn't become a lawyer I had a plan. I was going to be a lawyer. I was going to be a partner. I did this College Works thing so I could cut my partnership track in half. I was going to be a great lawyer because I had the gift of gab. I could talk people into things. I was a fighter. I thought lawyers were the people in front of the juries, which isn't most of them. Most of them are contract lawyers. And I had no idea I was the wrong person for that, because I'm the most imperfect speller and word chooser and all that. You need to be perfect at that to be a lawyer. And I stumbled across a business. You
we're going into law just as a default. Maybe I'll do it. I don't know what I want to do. And you went and worked with your dad. Did you just all of a sudden start thinking, man, I love this stuff? Because that's what happened to me in business. Like, oh my God, I love it. What happened? How did you figure
it out?
Oh, but the lesson, I forgot the lesson. Talk to people that do what you want to do. Find out if you like what they're doing. And there's a lot of lawyers that love their jobs. But if you want to be a lawyer, you want to be an astronaut, you want to be an engineer, go talk to people about, that's why we do this podcast. What's your day in a life like? What are you doing? Give them a call, figure it out. And maybe you change your mind. And in both our cases, that was a better choice for us. So
But
after you figure out, maybe I don't want to be a lawyer, these people don't like it. Why did you all of a sudden decide that you wanted to do real estate? And why did you all of a sudden, did you want to do syndicated deals and want to do storage? The weird one.
Well, I was so young at the time. So I'm like, I don't really know what I want to do. So I'm going to kind of just park it here for a little bit until I figure it out. And maybe I have an epiphany in life of what I want to do. And, you know, I was dating Jeff at the time. He was finishing medical school. So I kind of made the decision I didn't want to go too far. There was a brief stint, and, you know, from coming back from USC, working for my dad. And then I went to work for Arnold Schwarzenegger's re-election campaign, you know, was governor for California. And that was like 2006. So I did that for like a year up in Sacramento. And, you know, I had the opportunity to go jump on like a campaign in DC because everybody went, it was an election, presidential election year after that. And I just decided, you know, I was dating Jeff. I'm like, I can't go work in DC or, you know, really close. I think I'm going to come back. And then there were some major, major bumps in my dad's business, like major things. I mean, it was a new business and I just felt an obligation, to be honest, to really get into the trenches and help them fight. And that's what we did. And man, I cut my teeth. I learned so much. I mean, you play every position on the field in a situation like that. It was almost essentially like a startup, but also kind of we're on the defense, fighting for our life, fighting for our business. So you learn so much during that kind of adversity and times of stress. And that's kind of where I got my start. And then I don't want to say I got stuck, but maybe I got kind of stuck and I didn't love it for a long time. I didn't, you know, but I think what I didn't love is I didn't love where I was at in life. You know, I still had all these problems in my head and things weren't perfect. And I felt like I needed to heal. I had a lot of anxiety in my life. You know, it brought me to my knees a couple times. Like it was tough. So it was like, I felt like I had to be 100% perfect before I could like figure this out, you know, but it's like all in this journey together.
But you're still beating yourself up from that broken arm. And that's interesting what you just said. You ask yourself why you don't love it. Because you can, my brother in his podcast, Jerome's his name, he said, hey, try it out, but commit to a year. And he didn't say what you're saying. You're saying, I didn't love it, but maybe I didn't love it because I wasn't looking at it through the right lens because I just had this negativity. And when I got rid of the negativity, all of a sudden I could see what I love. Did that same thing happen to Jeff? Were you having problems loving Jeff because of your negativity? No way at all.
Not that guy. But I think you're a more loving person when you heal from things in life too, right? You have the capacity to love more. You're more patient. You're more kind. All the things, all the good things. So, and you're more, you know, like your mind just opens up more. You're more creative. You're more excited. It's just such a change. And when you feel like you're in that position and you can really work, because to me, I've always had the motivation to get up and to go. I've had that since I was a child and I had that fire in my belly every morning. Like, I want to be the best. Let's go, baby, you know, but it went away for a while. That fire went away. It got put out. And I think that's really when I lost myself for a while. So coming back to myself and peeling those layers off that I had created. It's like, there's, like I said earlier, there's a freedom in that. There's a power in that. And it's, you feel like you can do anything when you find yourself, when you're free to be yourself, and especially like when you're more confident in life, you can go in for the ask and do all the things. You take your shot, you get in the game, you know, but it takes work.
Are you enjoying the show thus far? We go through so many resources and links with this podcast, it's tough to keep up. I get it. That's why Matt and the rest of the team put together the Edge of Excellence Bundle. In it, you'll find different tools that relate to overarching themes and topics of the show. Things like DISC assessment tools, time management strategies and tactics, stress and anxiety management tools, exclusive videos and episodes from this podcast that is not released anywhere else, and so much more. The best part? As a valued listener of the show, you can access the Edge of Excellence bundle 100% for free of charge. That's right, for simply being awesome and tuning in. To get access, all you have to do is go to www.collegeworks.com/podcast and fill out the short form there for us to get the bundle over to you. Once again, it's www.collegeworks.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
So you were lured to your path, and it's so similar to me. I wasn't parking it here to see. Yes, I was. I was parking it here to see what happens, and then I'm going to go start a different business. And the business I was in fell apart, and these two guys wanted to restart it and needed some help. And so me and another guy helped. So you're in the same thing. You're parking it here, see what happens, planning on leaving like I was. And then you had, I didn't have an obligation to help. I just liked it a lot. You felt an obligation to help and fight for the family business and pay back your dad for what he'd done for you. And
yes.
At the time, what was going wrong? You weren't having financing issues, or what was the problem?
Yeah, I mean, it was a newer business. It wasn't some big, you know, we have a great, I think we've created a great business. You know, my brother works here now and he's very talented. We have an amazing team. My sister does some stuff for the company too. So, but yeah, back then, I mean, we had nothing. We had no money. It was scrappy. It was thin. It was unsophisticated. And there were people in the business that had kind of seen the potential of self-storage and supposedly decided in a Bible study that they were going to, I know this sounds so funny, they were going to create their own business, but just not in the nicest way. I mean, there's a way to do things in life, right? And that's another discussion about integrity. What are your morals, your ethics? You know, those are things that I like to live by, but it was a very, very ugly way in which they did it, and rumors, and they were in our computers. They had, you know, employees that were working for us, but they had promised jobs for when this new company was going to be set up. They had talked to all of our investors. So it was just really ugly.
Yeah. And, just real quick, because I have a lot of people that work in my business that are going to go start other businesses.
There's a right way to do it.
The right way is, you communicate with people. You let them know what's going on. And I get you got to finish your job. And if you tell them you're leaving, they may fire you. I get that. But you communicate openly mm-hmm. and honestly. You don't try to take their people. You find your own people. You don't sabotage right. them. You lift them. You build them up. And you 100%. Create a relationship where they may want to help you if you go off mm-hmm. and start something on your own. And maybe it doesn't have to be in the same market. Maybe it is. But you have your own people, your own systems. You don't steal their IP. You don't have spies. You don't talk trash. You don't create rumors. You play the way. It's so hard nowadays for the people listening because the world is different today than it was when we were younger. This whole political environment has carried mm-hmm. into everything. And it used to be the two parties worked together and supported each other, and they didn't have the same views, but they can still get along. And now it's just trash talking and lies and just back and forth, and it's setting the tone for our society. So you have this
the perfection and the lies of like social media that everything's perfect and beautiful and wonderful, and my business just magically appeared, and BS is what I have to say.
My
about that.
Body's better, my face is better, my vacation's better, my meal is better, and it's always this way because I don't post my desk. It's just torture. And I'm on a one man crusade to end Instagram. And I go look at my daughter's friends and they're all in their bikinis. Like, why are you doing that? And I try not. So you and I try not to post the crazy stuff because we don't want to. I don't post some of the crazy stuff I do. And you do it with me because sometimes it's like depressing for other people. And so I'm not going to share that stuff in the open environment. I mean, there's things that we don't tell anyone. Because somebody said to me a long time ago, if they're not going to experience it, don't tell them. And it's just an Instagram. It's like, look at what I'm doing. Look what I FOMO, FOMO, FOMO. So anyway, we'll get back to it. Let's just dig into storage. Now, I love the storage business. And here's the one reason I love it. They're concrete boxes with no fixtures, no interiors, no improvements. And they cost the same as an apartment per square foot. And people never leave. It's just the most genius business ever. Why would you build an apartment that you have to rent out every month and you have to refurnish and repaint and recarpet and then market all the time and people keep moving? Why would you do that when you could just have storage? And the reason why is all the good sites for storage are already taken. So you either have to have something in the center of a city or you have to predict where the center of the city is going to be later. So I bet you have stuff in Austin that you guys got 15 years ago that was on the outskirts of Austin because you knew Austin would grow. I bet you have it in Boulder, in Denver, Colorado, because you predicted that. So why did you go into storage? And, you know, what's the keys to being successful in the site selection piece?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, storage, my dad was, you know, he had gotten in the storage business. So actually kind of going back to his time in 1981, he was that's the year I was born. He was a real estate broker, you know, really hustling hard to make it happen for our family. And he never saw us. A lot of real estate brokers work nights and weekends, you know, you're showing homes on the weekends. So he really wanted to make a transition into commercial real estate, thinking that he could spend more quality time with his family. So in 1981, you know, he went from making really, he had made, you know, pretty good money because he's incredibly good at sales, into commercial real estate and made like nothing the next year. So it was pause.
So everybody wants to do flip or flop or sell house. So there's a key point right there. If you're going in the real estate business and you love sales, if you're selling homes, you work nights and weekends. If you're selling office spaces, you work during the work week. So quality of life is quite different between the two. Your dad made a lot of money in the first one over time because he was good at it, but then shifted to the second one and had to go through the learning curve again. Why not just start a commercial? So keep going.
Yeah. So we made that transition into, somebody had told him about self-storage. And so he started off in the property management business. Him and a friend got together and they were managing facilities and doing, you know, okay at it. And then he was also brokering deals. And then, like I said, eventually syndicating, you know, friends and family money together so we could acquire and buy our own. So when I jumped in.
You've got selling houses, a lot of people love, but I don't like the hours. You got commercial real estate sales, which I love the hours and I love the pay. And then you have property management, which is the third thing, where you're managing other people's properties, helping them find tenants and taking care of all the hassles. I don't love that business either because that's a low margin business. So out of those three, if you're listening right now, look at commercial. Right. The other two have their issues. So he's doing property management, not making a lot of money because that's a tough business to make money in.
It is a very tough business to make money in. And if you want to get into commercial real estate, I would recommend maybe brokering before you get into kind of the investment side, because you learn so much. You learn how to analyze and underwrite and all the people and the players. And, you know, so that's how a lot of people kind of enter the space, is by brokering their specific asset class and then kind of make the leap. So I think that's what my dad did. And then, so when I joined, it was like storage, and I'm like kind of thinking to myself, like, why are we in this asset class? Because the lenders don't understand it. A lot of people don't know what it is. It's not very popular, but that was over, you know, 20 years ago. Today, it's one of the best performing asset classes out of all the property types. It's a recession resistant asset class. It's done better than any other property type in a down market. And, you know, I still think we're kind of at the forefront of where self-storage is. It's definitely changed even from the time I've been. It used to be very kind of mom, pod. You know, you have a chain link fence and a Rottweiler running around the property. And now it's just like, it's a totally different game. I mean, it's much more sophisticated, and there's 4, 5, 6 story, you know, climate controlled buildings, Bluetooth access, everything's remote. There's a lot of autonomy now. I mean, a lot of sites are going fully autonomous where nobody's even at the site. So there's no employee there. So it's a very great business to be in. And kind of like you said, there are a lot of good locations taken. It's a very competitive. So from a site selection process, it's very tough, but we have a whole team. I have a team behind me. I'm actually very involved in a lot of the site selection process and looking for deals, but it comes down to, you know, we have a lot of resources and tools. It's connections. If I want to do something around here, talking to brokers and people, and you have a network of people that are kind of feeding into your pipeline, you know, those specific deals. And then it's just, you know, through like CoStar, we call it Crexy, or some of these kind of other online programs that have, it's kind of like a Redfin for commercial real estate, that you're able to access all these properties and analyze them. So you're looking at a ton of properties in order to find kind of that one property that will work, especially if you're developing. which we also develop now. We do ground up construction, which is something that we kind of got into in the last decade and has been a lot of fun for me and very exciting and kind of given us a little bit of an edge. Kind of, we're vertically integrated because we own and operate our own property. So we're an operator, you know, everything is in house here, but now we develop too. So we understand construction. So from a site selection process, we can find an existing property that somebody's selling that we believe we can go in and create value add. So we're going to put kind of our operational infrastructure onto the property and increase rents, maybe add on additional square footage. Maybe the previous operator was marketing the rents below market. So there's like a variety, there's a whole host of things, you know, as a more sophisticated operator, you're going to go in, you put your eyes on and you believe you can kind of take the rents from here to here, or you can expand the, you're going to add value, right? So that's where the value comes in. But then we also, you know, we site select to do ground up construction, but that's a much longer, higher risk profile, much more patient process, but there's much more reward at the end if you hit it right. So yeah, it's been,
you know what, a lot, I don't know, I don't think it's the majority, but a lot of people in their 20s, my audience, wants to do when they're 35. Like the number one thing I heard, the most common thing people want to do when they're 35, retire. And so there's this, yeah, there's this whole group, and the people are about to crash
their
car. Slow down, don't crash your car right now. So I have all these people that tell me, yeah, I just want to make a bunch of money and retire when I'm 35. And what you just laid out is the real world. One, Genevieve's shocked that you guys want to retire. You're never going to retire at 35. You're not going to want
come
to.
Come on, guys. Come on.
You're
let's go.
Bored
let's
out
go.
Of your mind. Most people die within 3 years of retirement. The average person lives 3 years after retirement. So can't retire. But then you just listen to what you just said. I mean, that's doing your homework. And unfortunately, if you're listening right now, whatever career you want to do, you're going to have to work hard at. Whatever career you want to do,
yes,
you're going to have to do your homework. And you're not a finance major. You don't have a finance degree. You had to go figure out deals. You had to figure out finance. You had to figure out how to evaluate what a good deal and a bad deal was. You had to figure out value add. You had to learn
that's
as
right.
you went. You had to figure out technology. You have to do your homework. And when you're 35, you're just getting started. I had this kid, Van, come into my house. And
yes, absolutely.
Jake's buddy, Van, he's a great kid. And he comes over with his notebook to my office. He comes over to my house. He's like, I want 15 minutes. Like, okay, I'm going to give you an hour, Van. He's got his book of ideas. And he's telling me these ideas. And he says, and I'm like, Van, just be patient. I always tell him, just be patient. You've got a long time. You've got a lot to learn. And he said, well, when do you make the most money? And I said, Van, they say, or they used to say, that you make the most money in your 40s. I think it's moving to your 50s. And he just throws his arm up, lays down, and he's like, oh. And I said, don't tell me you wanted to do it by the time you were 35. He goes, 25. Like,
oh,
it just doesn't work
goodness.
That way, because you're getting better and better. It's like investing.
Yep.
You get compound interest on what you learn. Invest early, learn early, and keep going. Because, I mean, listen to all that stuff you just said. You have to know what's going on in the world for site selection. You have to know what a good deal and a bad deal is. You have to have the connections. You have to know who not to trust and who to trust. You have to be aware. You have to get a team of finance people behind you. There's so much. And where your business is now is totally different than where it was when I met you, however many years ago that was. What was it, 10, 15 years ago?
That's right. Totally different business. And I'm probably a totally different person, right? There's growth all around, which is amazing.
You're still the same. You're the same core values. You're the same core person. That's always been the same.
It was always there.
You're just training yourself to be more stoked on yourself. Training yourself to be more patient with yourself.
And enjoying the journey.
Yeah, and enjoy
learn to enjoy the journey. Every day's different. Every year's different. You know, learn to try to enjoy the journey and enjoy the heart too. Enjoy the challenge.
Have I ever told you about karma yoga?
No.
So this friend of mine, Sanjay Kapoor, who lives in India, he was married to like the most famous movie star in India, Charisma. And he and I are like brothers from another mother. That's why when I go to India, I'm a better hookup than all our Indian friends because of this one guy. And he gave a speech and it was about karma yoga, which is a Hindu belief. And it's, if you have clarity of intention, which takes a little while, got to figure it out and spend your time and do your homework. If you have purity of heart, which you and I do, and we don't hang out with people that don't, and you act and you just have the values, and if you have a sincerity of action. And that's where a lot of people miss. They have the intention. Maybe it's not specific enough, not planned out enough. A lot of people have the pure heart. And then they don't have the sincerity of action. But if you have those three things.
That's good. That's good.
You let go of the outcome because you don't control the outcome.
Yes. Yes. That's another good one.
And although you're recession-proof, but you know, a bomb could go off. A wave could happen. Who knows?
100%.
You just got to let that go and enjoy the process. That's the rest of Karma Yoga. Enjoy the process.
I love that. I love that. And having, you know, because I've thought about that too, like setting a goal, like you have your mind set on this goal, but sometimes it doesn't work out. So also it's this weird dichotomy of like setting a goal and having focus, but also not being too attached to the outcome.
And then let it go. Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Oh, that's another good one. Every day. Let it go. Let it go.
So you're in this evolving storage business. You're spending a lot of your time on making sure you've got a good deal and the right deal, and you're crunching the numbers and the cap rates and all that. You're paying attention to what their future is, figuring out sites. What else are you doing? What else does someone that has a storage conglomerate do in their daily life?
Raising capital. So, you know, we do a lot of friends and family capital. So it's just friends and family that have made a lot of money with us in this journey. And then we do a lot of 1031 exchanges. So we'll take the money that was made on one deal and then move it into another. And you hope over time, well, it has happened over time, that kind of snowball gets bigger and bigger. But, you know, we've kind of transitioned where these checks are getting bigger and bigger and our company has gotten, you know, increasingly better. So we really have that track record now in the foundation to be able to potentially go to, you know, an institution, whether it's a big insurance company or a private equity fund or a family office, which is another name for, you know, a very, very wealthy family that, you know, sees our track record and wants to invest, you know, pretty big money in our platform so we can have what's called like a programmatic venture. So we don't have to kind of stop and start on each deal. We can, you know, they might dedicate $100 million and say, hey, I want you to go spend this, do, you know, value add and some development sprinkled in there. And then there's, you know, there's investment horizons and hurdles that you, you know, obviously returns you have to perform. So that's kind of where we are right now. You know, we're talking to a lot of institutions and people that want to kind of deploy bigger, you know, sources of capital into our space because we have the proven track record now that's, you know, kind of what you're saying, that the hard work has finally paid off. And we're kind of in that position now where people see that. And so a lot of people are coming to us, even smaller people, and hey, can you help me, you know, build this facility or would you like to invest? But I think kind of where we're at is to be able to do it on a much bigger scale now, which is really exciting.
Okay. So let's shift gears a little bit. You and I belong to this business cult called YPO. And how many women are in our chapter? Four?
Me, two, three. Oh, there's one in the gold.
Okay.
So, but three out of
about 50. And I know the stats, 3% of businesses worldwide are run by women, 11.5% in the US. Those were the stats when I was chairman of EO. And you're in charge of you're the chairperson of the Women in Real Estate group for YPO. You're in this group. There was, oh, Shannon, I forgot about Shannon, four.
Shannon.
So you're in, you know, this weird business cult that has a lot of testosterone and some of those family offices you're talking about. What do you do to change that? What are you doing to level the playing field? What are you doing to cope? What do you do to cope with that?
I think, you know, it's kind of challenging at first, you know, I shouldn't say anything or, you know, but I think
there's that voice.
Yeah. I think the more authentic I've become, it's kind of like I'm taking my shot and kind of just when there's times that maybe something needs to be said, then I'm going to say it and I'm going to voice my opinion and, you know, say the things that need to be said.
And what happens when you
overall,
do?
I think there's been a lot of support. I think we have a great group of guys that have actually been incredibly supportive of me. A lot of them feel like my brothers. I mean, I consider you a brother. I mean, a lot of them have been incredibly loving, kind, and supportive. And but there's been like little things here and there. You know, I'd love to see, you know, additional women join the chapter. I think it's been such a great, I feel so lucky to be in this group. So I just the amount of knowledge that and things that have been brought to the table, the networking that maybe otherwise would be a little bit more challenging for a woman. I think that's the hard part is the networking, because, you know, it's like, what do you guys like, you know, it's just harder. You got to find ways that work that maybe people aren't looking at you sideways, you know? So.
So what, one of the things I remember, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but you kind of remind me of Lisa Mirage this way. You sit and you observe and you pay attention, and you're not like me that just shows up and throws up all the time. And some of it's good, some of it's bad. You think about it and you share well thought out comments and ideas. And you came to me one time and you said, yeah, you guys say that you want women in the group, but really you don't, because they're not, you don't want them in the subgroups. And why don't we want them in the subgroups? Oh, because it's locker room talk. You know, we have these little subgroups of eight and there's locker room talk and all this stuff. And you called us out on that, right? You came to me and called us out. So you had this strong reality that you shared that people hadn't thought of before. And then they go, oh, wait a second. She's right. Why would we protect this bad way of talking? Or, you know, and I'm labeling it as locker room talk. I don't talk that way, but sometimes people want the freedom to do it. Why would we settle on being down low when we have an opportunity to raise the bar? Like when Jill quit drinking, I quit drinking. So it helped me raise the bar. And I remember coming forward and sharing that. It hasn't changed yet, but it's changing because of that. Where do you draw the bravery? Where does the bravery come from to stand up for what you feel is right? Which I do too. Where does it come from?
I think just that inner fight in me, that just to want to be a part and to get in and to participate and to show everybody, like, I'm going to do this. I think it's just that inner persistent
fight for what you believe, I mean, fight for your morals, fight for your values.
Yeah.
Fight for what what we think we are. You're fighting for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just that, I don't know if it's brave. It's just that like feisty little, that maybe that's helped to get me here. Right. It's just that feisty inner little voice that I have and wanting to be a part of this. And,
but it gets respect.
I don't know.
So if you're listening right now, you want to know how to get respect, stand up for what you believe in. You want to know how to get respect, figure out the values of the people that are around you and show them that your beliefs align with their values. And call them out when they're acting outside of their values. The values are a decision filter, right? If you're not in line with your values, something's wrong inside you.
Yeah.
You call them out and you command respect.
And I think traditionally it's been kind of, you know, there hasn't been a lot of women. So it's just like stepping into the unknown, right? For all of us, that's hard. Change is hard. So being in a forum with a woman, it's different. It's change. It's uncomfortable at first. They don't know. They're afraid to share. You know, maybe they don't want to be vulnerable with a woman. Maybe it feels strange to them. So I think it's just showing them that, like, it's safe around, it's, women are safe too. Yeah. You know, I think we bring a lot to the table. We have an inner intuition and wisdom that we bring to the table. And we want to be every bit as a part of these groups, I think, as the guys want to be. And we're every bit as supportive and, you know, just wanting to jump right in. So I think it's just the unknown. And so that's why you have to give a little grace too. Voice your opinion, but there's also a lot of grace for trying to understand the other side. So,
but I know we're out of time. I got two more questions for you. How has where you're at now surprised you? What's different than you expected?
How is it? I mean, I never thought I would be kind of living where I am right now. I live in San Clemente by the beach, and I never thought I would be like able to see like the ocean and life. Jeff and I just, we feel so incredibly lucky to kind of live, you know, somewhat close to the water and just have, that peace. And I don't think we never kind of really envisioned that kind of at our age that we'd be able to kind of be somewhat close to the water. So I know that's kind of an odd thing, but I think, yeah, just in our business too, I don't know if I've always, you know, going back to that just inner fire, I've always known that I was going to push every day and that had to amount to something, but I feel pretty blessed to be like where I am in my business and to be with my family, to have my siblings, to have my husband and my kids and everybody's healthy. And I'm not done yet. For me, it's not about the money. It's about the journey. That's the exciting part for me. Continually growing and stretching and becoming. That's that's the magic for me. And helping, like, this is, I feel so lucky to be on this call, like, just to be able to impart a little bit of the wisdom that I have to anybody that picks or, you know, listens to this podcast. Like, I feel so blessed that you asked me, Matt, to be on this. And I was like, you know, this is a little uncomfortable. I've never done a podcast, you know, I don't know all the things, but I just want to tell, like, your listeners, it's okay, right where you're at today. You are okay. One step at a time. If you want to be something different and change, that's totally possible, but just put one foot in front of the other and you're going to get there. And don't get frustrated with the process either. It's a journey. And you think, like, getting here, you think maybe getting that car or getting the house or once I finally, that's not it.
There's always a better car, meaningful. A bigger house, a better plane. That's not it.
Trust me. It's not that. It's not all the stuff you see on all the glitz and the glamour on Instagram. It's the peace and it's the commitment to yourself and those goals that you hit. That's where the gold is.
And the freedom.
And the freedom that comes with that. And you have to walk through the fire to get there. It's not going to be, I'm not going to say, oh yeah, it's so easy to kind of find your, it's some people easier, you know, than others. Some people have maybe like had Sean Baldwin, more challenging
are you talking about Sean Baldwin? People that are just born with a jet plane in their mouth. We try to mention him. He told me to never mention his name on a podcast. I try to mention every podcast.
Oh, we love Sean. We love Sean. But yeah, it's a journey. Like going back to the, maybe that's the kind of theme of the podcast, but just be patient, guys. You're going to get there. I promise you, you will get there. If you make those positive changes in your life and take care of yourself and you make that commitment to just get better, it's going to happen. But be patient.
Last question. Think back to your 20s, made a sacrifice, something you wanted to do or some event or something, and you made a sacrifice and you thought it was like the worst thing you had to do because you had to do something else to propel yourself. What was that sacrifice that you're so glad you made back in the day?
I think just working on myself.
Pausing.
But I've made a lot of.
Pausing to be brave and work on yourself.
Yeah, making that decision. Making that decision and sticking with it. So.
Well, Genevieve, we're going to call it. I'm going to say this. I don't know what my favorite podcast is, but I thought Francisco's was. Which comes out next week. And now I think maybe it's yours. So
oh my gosh, that's so sweet.
I've done a lot of these. You did a great job. So you just found another thing you're awesome at. Thank you so much for making time. And thank you for coming on The Edge of Excellence.
Thank you so much, Matt. And thank you to all the listeners. Wish I could meet all of them. You know, one day maybe we'll do a live Matt Stewart podcast. That would be really cool.
Ooh, okay. Well, I'm going to Minnesota this weekend. Come with me if you want. There'll be about 50 listeners or 100 listeners there. Come on down.
Oh, wow.
It's a little cold.
Well, thank you, Matt. Honestly, I love you so much. Let me just pour on you really quick. Matt is one of the most amazing people that I know. Just his positive spirit and the amount of love that he's poured into me and helping me believe in myself is incredible. And you have a gift to change people's lives. And like, it's incredible. And I'm so thankful for you. And you've helped so many people. I mean, countless people, and you believe in people. You see that kind of talent. And I'm just really, really thankful to you, Matt. So I just wanted to say that.
Third time I've cried this week. Thank you very much, Genevieve.
Love you. Love you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode today on the Edge of Excellence podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this exact episode with them. This show exists to showcase what is possible when young leaders are willing to step out of their comfort zone and choose to excel in their lives. To learn more about our internship for young and ambitious students, www.oneinternship.com/podcast to see if it's something that makes sense for you. Once again, it is www.oneinternship.com/podcast. Let this be a reminder for you to live on the edge of excellence in your business and life. See you next time.